safest car. He's the most honest car you ever see.
It's been a dream ever since I've had it.
The first time I heard that engine screaming, I thought, I gotta have one of those.
For me, the cars have personality.
What's great about a BMW Classic is the community that surrounds it.
When you listen to that, that's why we're here.
Welcome to Classic Heart, the BMW Group Classic Podcast. This is JP, and my guest today is actually not only a guest, he's not only a great photographer, he is also, and I'm very happy about this, I can call him a true friend. So with no further ado, I would like to introduce to you Mr. Grumpy himself, the eye of Classic Driver and so many other classic events and classic car photography. Welcome, Rémi Dagegen, or as we say in French, Rémi d'Argéjean.
Thanks a lot for this introduction. That makes me a bit embarrassed, but well, I think you've said everything.
Yes, I think we can stop now. Everything
yes,
has been
exactly.
Done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Rémi, thank you very much for joining us today, because I know that your schedule is super, super tight, because you travel around the world and having the fantastic chance to see beautiful cars.
Yes,
meeting
indeed.
Interesting people around cars.
Yes.
And for those, I think, three people who might join in who have never heard your name, I think it's fair to say that you did not start off as a photographer,
but
you changed your life completely. And my question is, was there always the wish to become a photographer when young Rémi, growing up in Reims, in the Champagne region of France, did you always want to become a photographer?
No, not at all. Well, the funny thing is now that my career as a photographer has been longer than my previous career in my previous job.
What was the previous job, if I may ask?
I started in 2005 at Peugeot.
Mm-hmm.
First as a marketing specialist for the West of France for spare parts. So something
very exciting,
super sexy. Yeah, but you begin at the very basic level to climb the stairs slowly and the steps slowly. So I did that for 1.5 years in Bretagne, and very quickly they understood that I was a bit turning in circles and I needed to do something else. So they proposed me to take the job over what I was doing in Bretagne. That means to take care of the marketing program for spare parts for the whole French market. And I did that for, I think, 4 years or 3.5 years. And after that, they proposed me to move to the new vehicles and to be an advertising manager as well for the French market,
mm-hmm.
as I was then back to the headquarters in Paris. And to conceive and develop the marketing campaigns for the French market and the advertising campaigns, it was clearly better for me to be closer to the product.
Yeah.
So I was working for Peugeot for 8.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point I thought, okay, I think I don't really like the strategy of the brand anymore. The strategy, or what I always say, the non-strategy of the group, I think it's time to move and to make a decision. And a friend of mine, she's also a photographer, she told me, you know what, you should just start as a photographer, as a classic car photographer. Because
One moment, how old were you then?
I was 31.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's the age where you can still start from zero again, more or less.
I'm a strong believer that you can start any time from zero at any age. It's just a matter of your point of view in the end.
We will talk about it later.
Yes.
So she told me that, and I said, yeah, but I mean, come on, I'm not a photographer. I'm just taking pictures from time to time on some classic car events just for my pleasure. Mm-hmm. Say, yeah, but come on, look at how people react on social media. Back then, I only had Facebook.
Yeah, we are very old, Rémi.
Yes.
We speak exactly. About Facebook.
Yeah. Who is still using Facebook, actually?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, my community on Facebook is still growing. I'm very proud of it.
Yeah. Again, the age banner is waving on us.
Yeah, it's probably old people, but I don't care.
We are very inclusive.
Yes. So she told me, yeah, look at how people react on social media. People love your pictures. So start as a photographer and it's going to work. And so I think the night after that, I didn't really sleep. The next day I went to the human resources and told them, okay, where should I sign? I think I just followed my guts and I thought, yeah, actually it's going to be like 200% in relation with my passion, which I strongly needed. And I just made the decision without thinking, which I think sometimes is the best thing to do, to not think too much. Yeah. Because otherwise you're stuck and you don't make any decision because you think, oh, but what if? And 1.5 months later, ciao, I was flying, I mean, with my own wings, you know, so it was a bit scary, but in the same time, not at all. It was strange. Mm-hmm. Well, if I remember well, because as I said, it was like 9 years ago, nine and a half years ago. So,
I mean, there are so many comments I would like to leave on that, because first of all, I really admire you for making that decision.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if I would have the guts to do so, because I'm more on the security side of life. Did you ever regret doing this?
Obviously, when you're freelance, you have some moments which can be a bit more difficult, a bit more challenging, because, yeah, the activity goes in waves. You know, sometimes you're completely overwhelmed. Sometimes you think, what am I going to do next week?
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't regretted any second, really.
Me too. Me neither, if that's more correct. I did not regret it because otherwise we most likely haven't met.
Exactly.
So, and I think that's also something beautiful which comes with change, that you meet new people or you surround yourself with new people. But do you remember your very first shooting?
Well, I started. I was free like 2 days later to attend Retromobile. I took a few pictures for Art Curial, but just like that, just...
So we have to say, wait a minute, Art Curial, a very famous French auction house for cars.
Exactly.
Just for those who did not know that.
Not only cars, but I know the people working at their motor cars department since maybe 20 years for Mathieu and Pierre. We are longtime friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I helped them during that week to present the cars to the customers or the potential customers. And I also took some pictures, but just for fun.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most important ones was for Classic Driver, believe it or not. And I remember very well. Yeah, yeah. Isn't it beautiful?
Yes.
I remember very well. I sent an email to say, hey, I'm a new freelance photographer. I'm French. There is a Toronto in a few days, weeks, I can't remember. Would you like me to cover it for you? And I got an answer from your dearest colleague, Jan.
Yes.
Who told me, yes, definitely, let's go for it. So as this is my very first or my oldest memory, we can say that BMW was involved because BMW is partner of the Toronto since maybe 15 years now. I can't even remember.
I think quite from the beginning, actually. We need to ask Patrick about it, but I think it's right from the beginning. But you mentioned also like the passion, because you said when we started talking about the way where you slide into photography, into car photography, you said that, you know, it wasn't a beginning, it was just my passion. And I took some photos here and there.
Yeah.
So when did the passion start? So I think one of the questions I like the most is, what is your earliest car memory?
I was, I think, probably 6 or 7. And one of my parents' friends, one of them had a Ferrari Testarossa.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, put it in the context, it was like 88 or 87.
Yeah.
Like the Testarossa was the thing to have when you had money. It was like the top of the top.
Mm-hmm.
So in a city close from where we lived, there was a classic car meeting every year. And my parents' friend was there with his new Testarossa. And as we went there, he saw us in the... It was like very close to the Ferrari parade.
Yeah.
And he was yelling at us, hey, come. Yeah, I have a spare seat next to me. Do you want to come for the parade? I said, oh, yeah, maybe. And you know, there were my parents pushing a bit at the back, say, yeah, okay, so there is a great opportunity, go. So I went to the Testarossa. I sat in here and, you know, sports car, you're like 6 or 7. You can't see anything. You were sitting so low in the car.
Yes.
So I remember, so we started obviously, and I remember I could just see the trees over me through the windshield. I couldn't see the road at all because I was sitting so low. I was hearing the engine behind me like crazy.
Yeah.
And this is the first memory.
Wow. What a lovely one.
Yeah.
And it's exactly as you say, like if you are small and you sit in these cars, and actually one of my earliest memories is in a SM because my family used to have some of these.
Crazy.
And I really remember if you sit down in this beautiful designed seats, which of course at that time were just seats.
Yes.
The only thing you saw is like the top of the dashboard.
Yeah.
And then everything above, but which is like on the edge of
the sky.
The sky, exactly.
Or the trees. No, but it was my first love. Ferrari was really my first love. Then it evolved with some of the brands, some of the cars, but Ferrari was the first love. Like I think many kids, it's a bit cliche to say that, but that's the case.
Sure.
So I won't change it. I won't change the story. That's how it began.
I mean, you know, my very first car model, not like for playing with Matchbox and Seeker and the other stuff, like, so really like the Siku, by my real model, which was not for playing, was a 288 GTO Burago in red with the cream hide plastic interior.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Right?
Nightmare.
Yes, absolutely. But for me, it was like the Holy Grail. It was like, and no one is allowed to touch it or something like this.
It's funny because in my case, the very first model that I had that fascinated me and which was completely out of my childhood era, it was the 250 Testarossa with pontoon fenders.
Oh, really?
So something super specific when you are like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Because I had my first model when I was a bit older.
Yeah.
When you are like 9, maybe 10, maximum 10. I mean, it's so specific as a car, like from the mid, let's say mid late 50s. So yeah, I wasn't really interested in the more contemporary cars.
Yeah.
Funnily.
Yeah, this I cannot say for me because I remember that I was obsessed with fire trucks, police cars, ambulances. And I know this was actually my very first time when we visited Paris that I could remember. And I was, it's a dear memory because I was walking down from the hotel, which was close to Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a small toy store like there were in that time, back at that time.
Yeah, exactly.
And I bought my very first, I think it was a Trafic Majorette.
From the
police car.
Ah, from the police.
From the police.
Okay.
So, and I think that was, then there was another set I wanted, but it was too expensive. My father said, no, we're not getting that one. Like with a helicopter, with a Hughes helicopter in it and all this kind of things. So I think I still have that car actually. I need to look it up.
I think I had the helicopter from the gendarmerie. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I'm very jealous now.
Pretty maybe, sure.
Yeah. And would you say that this drive in the Testarossa at that time, that this kind of really started everything in terms of cars?
I think I was already interested in other classic cars.
Yeah.
But I think that the ride in the car really gave me the virus, definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk a bit more about the work as a photographer and your pictures. Do you have something like, let's say, a general approach?
For me, it has become, and since the first pictures I took when I was 15, I think it's quite natural. I don't really need to think before starting a photo shoot.
Mm-hmm.
I choose my positions depending on what I feel.
So you don't work with lights and stuff like this? You really look at natural lights and...
I prefer to work with natural light. Then sometimes I have some customers who I would say prefer a sort of studio atmosphere.
Yeah.
Or for some race cars that cannot go outside on the road, we have to recreate a sort of studio where the car is. But if I have to choose, yes, natural light is the best because you can play with it. It's like never ending. So it's just never ending in terms of inspiration. Natural light for me is like, definitely the best.
So some of the jobs I think are like, wow, and it's no secret. Who knows you is very aware that you're very emotional. And I think it's also part of the secret why your photography is so different. And I mean, there are many great photographers out there. And I just know it from the work they deliver to us when we commission them. Mm-hmm. And they have all their different styles. So really, even though I'm not an artistic person, that's also no secret, I really can see, okay, that is a photo taken by Remy.
I'm trying to put all my emotions, all my guts, and obviously all my passion into my pictures.
Yeah.
And probably people see it, people feel it. And that's, I say that in a very humble and very modest way, because I am very much like that and I'm not self-confident at all, as you know.
Yes.
I think now, yeah, people can recognize my pictures.
Yes.
The thing is, when you take a picture as a photographer or as an amateur, it doesn't really matter. When you take a picture, it has to create an emotion.
Yes.
It can be positive. People will love the picture. It can be negative. People will hate the picture. And I'm fully okay with that.
At least you get a feedback. You create an emotion.
Yes, but I want to create an emotion.
Yeah.
That's the point.
And I think that maybe, and that's a theory, when you photograph something you really like, and also it's very well known that you're absolutely into vintage Bugattis and historic Bugattis. I mean, that's also
cars,
like the French cœur or the French heart, right?
Yes.
We see a lot of painted pictures of Bugattis on your body, tattooed.
A few.
So there is a strong relation to that brand. And I mean, rightfully so. What a legendary brand.
Yeah.
So maybe you put yourself under so much pressure because you value the object like a Type 35 Atalante or whatever so much that you think you cannot make it the perfect picture because the object is already so perfect. Whereas on an object, a car, you think that might not so perfect or actually you dislike the design, it's easier to reach a quality level. Maybe that's the whole secret.
Well, I don't know. I think I just put pressure to myself because there is one thing I hate in life, generally speaking, it's to disappoint people.
That's a very brave thing to say, a very good thing to do, not to disappoint people.
Yeah, then it's a challenge in the everyday life, obviously.
Sure.
But I hate that. So I think, yeah, that's the biggest challenge, to make every photo shoot beautiful, as nice as possible, I would say.
Yeah.
So that nobody is disappointed.
Sure.
And it's almost too easy to make a nice photo shoot with a vintage Bugatti, with an Atalante. But I think it's even more challenging because everybody has already photographed, not everybody, but pictures and photo shoots of Bugatti Atalante or Atlantic or Type 35 Grand Prix. There have been so many already.
Yeah.
You have to reinvent yourself.
Sure.
And I am very demanding with myself to be sure that the result of each photo shoot will be at the level that I want, and to make sure that I won't disappoint anybody.
Yeah.
So it's a bit difficult to live with that, to be honest.
But you do it quite well.
That's part of my life. So
yes.
I'm getting used to that.
So do you try to tell stories with your photos? Is that one thing you try to do? Or do you want to show the perfection or the beauty of a car?
It really depends on the purpose of the photo shoot. If I have to photograph a car for an auctions house or a classic car dealer, or I don't know, mostly for these two kind of customers, I will do something very descriptive. I really need to describe the car as it is in all its beauty, with the best angles to describe the proportions, the lines, the design, all that.
Yeah.
Then the photo shoots for websites like Classic Driver,
for
magazines, storytelling, or for BMW or for other brands like we already did in the past.
Yeah.
I feel more free.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't put myself in a frame. How to say that? Yeah. I don't I don't have any frame. Yeah. I feel completely free.
So free spirit.
Yeah, exactly. I feel completely free to go through the photo shoot as I want,
yeah,
and to show the things how I want to show them with my own perception, my own sensibility, and my own eye. It's that there are no rules to mm-hmm. respect. That's the good thing.
The free flow of creativity.
But I love both. I love to also have to respect this frame and these guidelines to describe a car and to show it in all its beauty. But I also like this freedom when doing storytelling.
Yeah.
It's complimentary anyway.
And I mean, storytelling is a big thing because I remember together with Classic Driver and the French auction house Art Curial, you were sent to photograph a very, very special, let's say a sensational barn find. This was the fantastic encounter of the Bayon collection. So there was a French gentleman, Roger Bayon. He had the idea and the dream. So he was in logistics or something like this. It might be also, if I remember correctly, that he designed his own truck. But nevertheless, so this gentleman had the dream of creating his very own car museum focused mainly on French brands to also keep this French coach build tradition alive. And he amassed 200 cars in many decades. And the dream never came true because unfortunately Mr. Bayon had some financial issues. And the problem was that he needed to sell some of the cars, so some were already gone. But still, there was a big number of cars left. And then somehow after his passing, this collection got forgotten. And then this collection got rediscovered by Art Curial, who was asked to sell it off. And we jumped in as the partner to spread the word. And then, of course, photos taken by you, Remy. But I mean, tell us, how was the situation when you arrived at the chateau?
There were like 80 cars remaining and some absolutely crazy ones. I didn't know about that before Art Curial asked me to come to photograph the collection.
Yeah.
And they didn't tell me anything. They just gave me an address and told me, okay, we cannot tell you anything. It's completely secret. Where you are going to come, you won't believe it. And you don't have the right to talk about it to anybody before we send the press release. Say, okay, no problem. I arrived there. It was like a sort of old castle in the middle of France, like lost, like really in the middle of nowhere in the countryside. Huge house. And they were there digging into old files, old papers. And on the papers, it was written like Sauchik, Figoni and Falaschi, Chaperon, etc., etc. I said, not bad. And then they told me, okay, so are you ready to begin the photo shoot? So we bring you to the barns. I said, the barns. Yeah, all the cars are under barns. So we went to the backyard and actually the cars were not under barns. It was just like pieces of metal, barely standing on pieces of wood and not keeping the cars safe from the rain and from anything. All the cars were just rotting under that since maybe 60 years, 70 years. I was very much focused on my work and I was just taking the pictures that I had to take.
Yeah.
So I shot everything and suddenly they opened a last garage where sat two other cars. And they okay, so what's that now? First car was a very unique Maserati 2000 from 56, if I remember well, completely untouched. So in preserved original condition, what you don't find anymore nowadays or very rarely.
Yeah.
And the second car was a Ferrari 250 short wheelbase California. Same, in completely original condition. And the second car, so the California, was just disappearing under piles and piles of magazines. Like, yeah, blankets and magazines. I say, what the hell is that? I say, yeah, the car is sitting like that since years and years. So the trunk was completely bent because of the weight of the magazines.
What a nightmare.
So I finished my photo shoot. I went back home and I started realizing what of an experience it was. Once I saw the pictures retouched and looking at them one after the other, I said, what the hell was that? How often in the life of a photographer does that happen? I mean, it's once in a lifetime.
100%. Plus, and,
yeah,
we have to add that the car, the Ferrari,
yeah,
has a very famous owner.
Exactly. It was the car of, previously owned by Alain Delon.
And they say that the pair of sports shoes in the trunk are considered his, right? Because I saw them with a friend, just with the collection where the car is now. Unfortunately, we have to say both cars have been, by the wish of the owner, completely restored.
The Maserati is being restored at the moment.
Okay, is being, yeah.
And the California has been restored a few years ago.
But, you know,
ago,
yeah. I don't want to be judgmental here. It was a no-go for me. I think it was a bit like bending the history of a car. Mm-hmm. But on the
for
other hand,
well.
I mean, it's the owners. It's their decision.
Exactly.
But I find it a bit sad. That's, I think it's fair to say. But
to be very honest, I won't judge anything because the owner of the California is also a friend. The restorer of the car is also a friend.
Yes.
But the day I discovered the car restored, well, the very first time was at the Villa d'Este, actually, the Concours d'Elegance.
Yeah.
So the restorer took me to the parking lot and removed the cover. And I felt a bit sad and I didn't say anything, but I felt like, okay, but it's not my California anymore. You know, I spent a few hours, I would say, with the car when I was at the very first photo shoot under the barns. And it was a bit mine, you know, in a way.
Sure.
And when I discovered it completely restored, I thought, but it's not mine anymore. It's not as I knew it. So yeah. The sensation was a bit strange. Then obviously the car is absolutely amazing now.
Yes.
But.
And in very good hands, to be fair.
In very, very good hands, definitely.
Very respectful hands at the end. So.
Yeah.
And if you look at the result the car made when it was auctioned, I think it was sold for around 14 million euros. I mean, that's a very good performance in terms of value. I could not imagine what Alain Delon paid new when the car came out or when he bought it. And maybe this amount of money could have saved the late Mr. Maillon from his issues. But that's a different story. The aftermath of the whole thing was that we, together with our friends at Delius Glasing, published a book with your photos, Remy, telling the encounter of the Maillon collection. And I can really recommend to get that book because it's absolutely fantastic. I think it's sold out already, but you find them sometimes online at one of the auction house platforms or vintage bookstores. So get that book. And Remy, I never get enough of your stories from behind the scenes of classic car photography. Do you have another magic moment story for us?
Okay. So let's talk about to photograph the four Bugatti Type 59.
Yes.
You knew it. The four Bugatti Type 59 Grand Prix together on the 17-mile drive in California at Pebble Beach. I think it was in 2019. And it was, I think I'm not wrong saying that it was the very first time that the four cars were together again. Well, I'm not wrong. It's true.
Yeah.
They were for the first time together again since they left the factory in the 30s.
Yes.
So the moment for a Bugatti lover like me, I could say addict. The moment was historical.
Definitely.
Yeah, it was a historical moment. And so as a visitor, when you see them all together, it's something. But then when you have the right, again, a bit like the California, to spend like 2.5 hours with these four cars just for yourself, plus another photographer friend who was with me, it's like one day in your life.
Again, and absolutely. And
I will remember this for my whole life. I could take pictures of every single detail of every car. I could open the bonnet on every car to see the engines, to see, yeah, the details, the bare metal under the bonnet, everything. So, and these cars, as simple as they are, like many of the Grand Prix cars of that era, are full of many details, which are absolutely fascinating.
And very unique things, right?
Yes.
And you could even get very close to another very important Bugatti, right?
This is the, I would say, the fifth, in a way, Bugatti Type 59, which is the only one remaining in fully original condition.
Yes.
Which is the car which used to be owned, well, ordered and owned by King Leopold of Belgium in the 30s and 40s.
Yes.
And which has been kept completely original since that period.
Yes.
I had the chance, well, it's not even a chance, the honor, to complete my collection of Type 59 pictures, to make a photo shoot of the car in the Swiss Alps last year.
Yes.
And the car is truly amazing. Well, I am definitely for preservation. So to see such a car preserved since almost 100 years is like, yeah, absolutely mental.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
And again, full of details. It's completely different from the four other ones because it's been converted for road use for the King.
Yes.
And the photo shoot ended with the owner of the car asking me if I was finally finished taking pictures. He's patient, but at some point he was looking forward to the end. Say, yeah, I think I'm done. I'm never done, but yeah, okay, I'm done. Say, okay, because now it's time for something else. Say, yeah, okay, I know you want to leave. No. Leave your camera. Yeah, okay. Jump in the car and go to drive it. Say, are you kidding? I'm not going to drive that car. I just can't, you know? So imagine the very first time you are driving not only a Grand Prix car, but a Type 59. Not bad.
No.
And not any Type 59, but the only one like that. So
yeah, in original condition.
I mean, this was, again, a moment that I will never, ever forget.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I want to thank him for his trust because...
Ah, that's a big thing.
You don't have so many owners who are okay to propose somebody to drive their cars, especially when they are so pricey first, but so rare and such pieces
unique.
Of jewelry, I would say.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
This is what it is. And he drives his cars all as much as possible, I would say all the time, almost, but as much as possible. And I mean, what he has done that day is like priceless, definitely priceless.
Full stop. I think there's no...
Yes.
We don't
Otherwise,
need to...
Otherwise, I'm going to cry. So,
yeah, exactly. We don't want that. We don't want that. Because the car you're referring for, so this special Bugatti was also participating in the Concorso d'Eleganza Villa d'Este.
Exactly.
And you have a very, very special relation to this concours of elegance because you have been for many, many years... not only our eye of the Villa d'Este taking photos there, you did also the official photos for RM auctions, everything. So you've been quite a regular at this outstanding event. I remember that you did one of the most liked shot of a fireworks. I don't know when this was.
Yes.
I mean, this was the perfect timing. Unbelievable. And everyone at BMW Classic, everyone loves that photo.
And happy to hear that.
And I assume it's moments like this that makes the Concorso very, very, very special.
Mm-hmm.
But what are your feelings about the Concorso? Why is it so special to you personally?
I think for me, it's the best Concours d'Elegance in the world, or one of the two best, maybe, with Pebble Beach, which is a completely different style.
Yes.
Completely different in all the ways.
Yeah.
But the Villa d'Este, it's obviously the location, the atmosphere, the elegance in many ways, the cars, but also the people. And yeah, it's I find you're really transported in something different for, I can't even say one day, it's like 3 days now.
Yes.
From the Friday when the cars are arriving, or even the Wednesday, Thursday, when if we talk about the tour before, the prelude tour, But if we really talk about the location, from the Friday when the cars are arriving until the Sunday evening with the prize-giving ceremony and the famous fireworks, you are completely transported out of time and out of, I would say, the world, because you are in a, such a small bubble that you cannot really describe. You really have to experience it to understand what the Villa d'Este is.
I totally agree. And I mean, that's something I never saw that way, but you are in a different orbit. You are in a different galaxy for 3 days.
Definitely.
And that's, you said this so well, because that's it. You enter, and that's the difference to Pebble Beach. And Pebble Beach, I mean, Pebble Beach is Pebble Beach. The quality of cars is...
The quality, the quantity.
The everything is like...
It's just full in the face, and yes, you don't know where to look at, what to look at. It's incredible.
Absolutely. But I never had that feeling that I was taken out of this world. And with the Concorso d'Eleganza Villa d'Este, I definitely have this.
Yeah.
And speaking about a new world, Remy, we need to mention something, because there's a new episode in your life. So you entering also kind of a new world. And we now reveal the big secret that you recently became the curator of Fritz Burkhardt's fantastic Pearl collection. You first met Fritz when we did the shooting for Classic Driver of one of his cars, and he was a very keen supporter of Classic Driver in allowing us to shoot his cars. But you were the photographer, and now you're the curator. So how did this happen?
So there was that Bugatti Type 59, we talked about it. There was an amazing Talbolago teardrop last year at Pebble Beach. We did a few things together, and I think we get along pretty well. He just proposed me a bit impromptu during during a photo shoot. By the way, I'm looking for somebody to take care of the collection because it's just too much for myself. Would you like to do that? I know you love your job, you love photography, but would you like to join us to take care of the cars and the rest of the collection, the archives? Say, yeah, let me think. So actually the history repeats itself. I thought, okay, take a few days to think about it, but not too long. And I was super happy in my job as a classic car photographer. But this amazing opportunity that you don't receive every day, definitely not, came to me. And I thought, okay, so I think that's the right time to jump a second time, a bit like I did from jumping from Peugeot to being freelance. And I love my life in Paris, but when am I in Paris? I have an address in Paris, but I'm traveling all the time.
Yeah.
So it will be a different life in the Swiss mountains, but I think it's just going to be a wonderful new chapter. And it's been like 1 or 2 years, I was thinking from time to time, okay, but what am I going to do in 10 years? Will I still be taking pictures everywhere in the world, taking planes and trains and drive from one photo shoot to another? And the opportunity came to me, and for me, it was the best sign that I had to accept it.
It sounds like.
And yeah, I'm sure, I don't think, I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful chapter.
We can only say we wish that this is happening.
Thank
because
you.
I think it's the right thing to do. And it's a nice evolution of yourself as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's what I like.
It's a very unexpected evolution, but it's a nice one. So let's go.
And it's going to be great, I'm sure. It will work out very, very well. And with this positive and new chapter in your life, we have to come to a close to this conversation and our podcast. And Remy, thank you very much for giving us all the insights of the life of a car photographer. And as always, I would like also to thank the whole team behind the Classic Heart podcast. Without them, this would not have been possible. There's Alex and Marcus, Federica, who is taking care of all the good content here as our content editor. And if you liked what you listened to, then leave us a high star rating. Comments and criticism are more than welcome. Pitch new guests to us. You can reach out on all the social media channels. And please don't forget to subscribe to not miss one of our episodes. Thank you very much, Remy, again, for being our guest today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the great time. Thank you for the invitation. It was really nice.
You're always welcome. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.